Welcome to podcasts from AmericanCityAndCounty.com, exclusive interviews with local and state government leaders and experts in a variety of disciplines. Tune in regularly to hear the magazine's editors discuss news and trends in public policy, technology, public works, finance, and infrastructure. The live interviews are available only from American City and County, the voice of local and state government for nearly 100 years.
An award-winning engineering, construction, and operations firm, CH2M Hill has earned the confidence of communities across the U.S. with our innovative water, energy, transportation, and environmental projects. Today, we're serving clients in more ways than ever before. Performance optimization, revenue enhancement, electronic plan review. From short-term consulting to hands-on operations, CH2M Hill partners with you to make your community more efficient, cost-effective, and responsive to citizens. Visit ch2mhill.com to learn more.
This is Lindsay Isaacs, Managing Editor for American City and County, and I'm speaking with Dave Zelenak, Public Works Director for Centennial, Colorado. Dave was hired by Centennial as a consultant in 2007 to help the city determine whether it would outsource public works services or set up an in-house department. In 2008, he became the city's full-time Public Works Director, managing the city's contract with a private contractor for public works services. Dave, how did the city come to the conclusion that it would outsource all of its public works services?
We spent about 6 months studying that very question. Mm-hmm. And again, the question is not simply a matter of cost, but levels of service, responsiveness, and largely quantifying through a performance measurements process, quantifying the kinds of outcomes that we wanted. And so, you know, most decision processes would, as you know, normally start off with, well, how many employees do you need? Well, that was irrelevant because from a private sector bidding standpoint, I really don't need to be concerned with. In fact, that's kind of irrelevant from my standpoint because all that I really care about are the outcomes. And so if you kind of start at what is classically seen as being kind of one of the ending points, which is what is the outcome, what is the level of service, what's the actual service to the traveling public you're trying to merge with, if you start at that point and then you ask the question in reverse, you get a completely different answer sometimes. That's kind of what we did. So we started at the outcomes point and then we worked ourselves back into it. So well, what we did was we allowed the private sector. And we had actually three highly competitive bids from the private sector. Three different groups of companies proposed on it. Actually, weren't bidders; they were proposers technically, because there was no bid. It was a request for proposal (RFP).
Okay.
But we had three very very responsive, highly competitive proposers from the private sector. And we also created, which was I'm not saying that's novel because it has been I'm sure done before, but we also created a sealed bid by the city government.
Hmm.
And so on kind of bid opening day, as they say, when we popped the cork on the three proposals, we also had a fourth one, which was the possibility that we would insource the entire operation. And we'd be going out buying or renting our own dump trucks, have to go out, lease a facility, hire government employees, and provide all those thousand things in terms of risk management and personnel and training and all those things that a classic employer would do. And so we included all those costs in what we call fully burdened, which is a comprehensive cost analysis. And the bottom line was that there was not, in fact, let me go back and look at the numbers here, because the decision was actually not made on cost. Rather, it was made on service delivery, levels of service, performance, and risk management, to where, you know, one thing that we knew that we could count on, not knowing which way inflation would go and cost in the future would go, but one thing that the private sector could do that we really couldn't was they would guarantee us a price for the next 5 years. And in fact, the price actually goes down in the latter half of the contract. So you know, we're looking not just at what's the cost in year one, what's the total cost, and then what assumptions do you make, and then what? So how would their proposal be different fundamentally in terms of service delivery and performance measurements and all those things? How would their proposal be different than the one we proposed? And when we looked at the entire spectrum of in-source versus contract this thing out, the choice is very clear that the best service delivery model was an outsourced private sector model, which was a which as far as we know, we think we are the largest city in the nation to have outsourced its public works operation.
Okay.
We know that Sandy Springs, Georgia, is a 90,000-ish population, and they've outsourced completely. We don't know of any others, so I think it's probably fair to say that it's widely understood.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it's not a fact because we've never found one, but from our understanding, as I said, we are the largest city in the nation to have gone to this outsourced public works service delivery model.
I guess since you've had the contract in place for a couple years now, have there been any major changes to the contract?
No, in fact, you know, that's one of the most remarkable things I think about the contract that we were able to negotiate, because we have not had a not one single significant change order. One of the most critical things we thought was that we did not want to get bogged down into a constant series of nickel and dime, is what they're going to kind of nickel and dime change orders. Well, you want us to mow that? Well, it's going to cost you. You know,
mm-hmm.
or you want us to sweep what? Or do no? We didn't put that in the bid, but the contract was structured in a way so that we could actually exchange any one of the major service categories for any other major service category. So, for example, if we want, I think you know, one example that I use on what I call my rubber chicken circuit speech, is five stop signs equals 30 miles of street sweeping.
Huh.
And so for example, we can change out and not do any number of, in this case, example I use is we can choose not to do five stop signs, but we can trade that in for 30 miles of street sweeping. And so knowing in advance that we would not know how much exactly of which services we would want, but we built into it this very highly flexible system, which we call a value exchange system. And under that idea or under that premise, we're exchanging the values of, it could be pothole patching tons, it could be miles of street swept, as I mentioned, it could be any number of factors like that for any other numbers of factors. And we've actually developed a little table that kind of looks like, you've seen these little roadmap charts. How far is it from, you know, Minneapolis to St. Louis?
Mm-hmm.
Or you go down the side and you go across the top and there's your number.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very similar looking chart like that where we can exchange anything for anything else. And we get to pick how much of what we want. And the contract, I guess the point of all that is the contract is highly flexible, so we've not needed a single change order to date because of the highly flexible basis of the contract. In fact, it's been kind of a model, yeah, across the country.
That sounds so unusual. I've never heard of that before.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you used, you know, some other resources to create? Or is there, are there things out there like that that you've homegrown?
It's pretty much homegrown. I know that one of the predicates or one of the foundation, the building blocks of the contract was me having done this before. You know, I from what I've done in the past, I knew for certain I did not want to spend endless hours negotiating small change orders to a contract. And so we devised this system. And actually, post contract award, then once we knew that we had these guys locked in, that we then actually completed the first ever value exchange table. But the concept for it was locked into the contract, knowing that the details would be worked out after contract execution, which we did.
Right, that's interesting. Well, I wonder what question or questions you get asked most by other public works directors.
That's a great question. In fact, some of them I would say, you know, what are the benefits of the contract, and then what are some of the lessons learned? I can kind of walk down through these if you like, just
sure.
briefly with you, so just some of the benefits. One of the things is that's called commonly in the industry reach back. It's clearly there with us in this contract. In other words, unlike most public works agencies, we don't need to, again, remember I talked about working backwards, you know, that in our agency we don't start with the number of employees and then build the performance standards around the number of employees. In other words, knowing that in the north, as you know, snow and ice removal can be a major issue, major concern, and you absolutely have to meet that service delivery demand. That takes a certain number of resources, dump trucks, tons of salt, numbers of employees. In essence, we on the government side now of this contract have been released from the need to manage not just employees themselves, which along with that comes the fact that in my two previous jobs overseeing public works agencies, much of my time was spent, for example, in employee performance issues. You're hiring, you're firing, you're working endlessly. Those issues about budgeting and just the day-to-day stuff, to where you don't have time to really manage the operation.
Mm-hmm.
None of that's true in this organization because that's all done by contract. You know, I set the annual budget, or the city council sets the annual budget. We set the performance standards. And then they manage the number of employees. And so when it comes to a snowstorm, if they need six more snowplow drivers, they go find six more snowplow drivers from within their pool elsewhere in the metro area. Times like this right now when we're kind of winding down the construction season, we go into November, if it's not snowing and we aren't paving, then they can reassign those employees somewhere else, but they aren't charged against and we aren't paying for employees that we may not need in what we call the shoulder seasons. And so that's really one of the huge benefits of this. Both the notion of and again the overarching concept is that of reach back, and so they can reach back into other parts of their organizations to provide the level of service and provide the numbers of employees that we need. Again, based on the performance indicators that we have, which vary by time of year, because you can't pave 12 months out of the year, and you don't need snow plowing people in August. But you know that you're going to have peaks and valleys in your workload, and that's okay. It's built into the contract.
Right.
But beyond that, one of the other benefits is that our contractors, of course, aren't burdened by many of the government procurement and contracting rules. So when a city government goes out to buy certain items, they've got to go through a very strict government procurement or acquisition process. Well, the private sector is free. In fact, one great example that I love to use is that we had an issue once where a major salt supplier, this is a road salt supplier, had some equipment freeze-up problems, and they were unable to deliver road salt in the middle of a wintertime snowstorm. But through the relationships that our contractor had arranged previously with the salt provider, we went straight to the top of the pile, so to speak, and we became one of their number one priorities, getting us the road salt, which is something that we probably couldn't have done if we are just another 120,000 population city. Take a number, we'll get to you when we get around to it. But so they are burdened by the same government procurement rules that we are. I mentioned no personnel worries. I talked about the workforce size changes and the fact that the future cost increases are built into the contract. Actually, future cost changes, not just increases, are built into the contract. So we know exactly what the contract will cost us in 2012, and so we can budget around that preset number.
Right. Okay.
So those are some of the benefits. Some of the lessons learned, which is kind of the flip side of that, I think some of the things that we've learned is that performance standards, and I've talked about that before, those are the numbers of tons and miles and hours, the actual kinds of work that you want done, that needs to be quantified. And that's often very difficult. That's what took us, as I mentioned, 6 months to quantify through a performance-based contract, exactly what it was we wanted. This is not just do good, maintain the stuff, and minimize complaints. No, this is exactly, we want so many tons or so many miles or so many hours of certain kinds of products, which are exchangeable, but we knew going into this exactly what we wanted. And so as a result of that, the three private sector bidders could give us very, very close bids, very tight bids, because we knew exactly what we were looking for. Sort of. Again, keeping in mind that we can exchange things, but we knew pretty much what we were looking for. So the performance standards was a critical part of this. We do have a process built in for self-auditing now, and in addition to CH2M Hill, which of course is the prime contractor,
mm-hmm.
we also use a second independent engineering consulting company, Merrick and Company. That's what I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
The American company does the independent auditing and reviews of CH2, and so that's done by contract also. And so they are the contract watchdog. It's less than 1% of the total contract amount, but it's extremely valuable because the prime contractor never knows, for example, if on a Thursday the Merrick guys will show up and they will reconcile how many tons they reported they did and how many tons they actually did. They'll go back and pull the employee charge records, they'll pull the odometer readings from the truck, they'll pull the plant sheets from the asphalt plant, and they'll go stick the fuel and make sure that all four of those in that example all actually reconcile, so that the dump truck drove the miles on the day they said they did, the people worked where they said they did, and the materials were used where they said they were. And that's probably one of the most critical parts, and it's probably one of the least expensive parts, but it's one of the most critical parts in assuring that the performance is actually being delivered. And that's kind of another novel idea, too. So we have that. I mentioned about one thing we did was one of the overarching themes of the contract was in mitigating the risks. And some examples that I'll share with you that we ended up doing was the city decided that because if you just kind of rewind back to 2007, you remember gas prices were $4 a gallon.
Right.
And that has an impact because all petroleum products, including asphalt, was kind of unknown what that would do. And so what we decided to do was the city would actually be paying the bills on all the fuel, so there's no risk of fuel price escalation to the contractor, would buy all the asphalt, same reason, and because we didn't know from 1 year to the next how many tons of de-icing chemicals and salt on the roads they would need, we also decided that number one, we did not want them to ever have any incentive to minimize the amount of road salt or chemicals that they put on the roads for de-icing, for public safety. And so we buy all the road salt and de-icing chemicals. And so what that did was really, that was the last thing that we pulled out that we think eliminated all the uncertainties for the bidders. And so the bidders knew exactly, you know, they could quantify how many, what's a cost per mile of street sweeping? What's a cost per ton of asphalt patching? But they could never guess, what will the 2011 winter season look like? Yeah. And so we do share some risk there. So the city's on the hook. If we have a series of blizzards back to back, then we've got to assume some risk along with the bidders. But the benefit then is that, as I said, we got three very good bids because they were all bidding against the same thing. Nobody was having to speculate as to, as I mentioned, what the fuel price would be or what the future winter seasons would look like.